Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, January 23rd, 2020. We'll start with a story titled Estimate to Raise Brez Tops $1.3 million. This is written by Jennifer Bailey in Danville. An initial demolition quote came in less expensive than under some past estimates to tear down the Brez Tower and the adjacent Vermilion County Courthouse Annex. Danville Public Works Director Carl Carpenter said the quote came in at $1.35 million. Carpenter said the cost also includes the disposal of the courthouse annex. This is not to be misunderstood as a bid. It is a quote only to give council an idea of costs associated with demolition, according to Carpenter. This is a tool for the council to use as a discussion point on the building's future. Carpenter wouldn't name the demolition company that gave the quote, saying it would be unfair to. City officials have previously said they were seeking demolition cost estimates from Chicago suburbs companies. City officials also don't have the next steps lined up yet, according to Ricky Williams Jr. Williams said he needs to talk more with Carpenter, City Engineer Sam Cole, and Corporation Counsel Chuck Mockby IV to recommend what comes next. Williams also says he has no idea about funding for the demolition. In July of 2019, a non-scientific commercial news poll showed most people favored the 1918-12 story historic building's demolition due to it being a safety hazard and no one moving forward with its renovation. The poll questioned what was city officials have given owners of Collins Tower, formerly Brez Tower, a deadline to fix structural issues on the building. If the deadline is missed, should the city proceed with an effort to demolish the building? Those responding yes were 188, 46 said no. A Main Street lane closure has occurred since June 30th, 2019, when debris fell onto Main Street from the tower at 4 North Vermilion Street. At that time, Jerry Collins, who with her husband Chris was buying the building on contract from Scotty Porter, according to Williams, wouldn't give an update on the building. Williams said he doesn't know the full terms of the agreement, but said Porter retains the rights to the top floor and antenna on top and antenna income until the Collins pay Porter the full amount. Before the additional debris fell last summer, Williams said the Collinses had until the end of July of 2019 to fulfill their promises regarding the building or the city would proceed in court. I asked them to secure the building to ensure the safety of the public, Williams said last summer. Williams said he met with the Collinses in November of 2018, and they promised to get the project done. Promised to get it removed. They knew it was a problem and still hadn't gotten it removed, Williams said, adding that safety netting also wasn't put up. My goal is always to keep people safe, he added. The city had a structural engineer assess the building last summer, and until a netting type system to catch falling debris from Brez Tower is erected, the structural engineer recommended westbound Main Street lanes south of the tower remain closed to vehicles and the sidewalk remain closed to pedestrians. It is considered a dangerous structure by the structural engineer, Carpenter told Alderman last summer. According to a report from John Zimmern, a licensed structural engineer with the Farnsworth Group of Champaign, it is my understanding that during a storm event on the afternoon of June 30th of 2019, pieces of the terracotta facade on the south side of Collins Tower fell to the street. Of the pieces which fell, most of them appeared to come from a corn ice ledge located above the second floor windows. The largest pieces, whole blocks, each weighing approximately 100 pounds, were caught by temporary scaffolding and a canopy structure. Many pieces as large as a softball fell to the sidewalk. Some pieces the size of small rocks, approximately 2 to 3 inches in diameter, ended up in the two westbound driving lanes of Main Street US Route 136 and diverted traffic to the remaining three lanes. On the afternoon of July 1st, 2019, I conducted a visual inspection of the terracotta facet with the aid of a bucket truck with a 70-foot-long boom provided by the city. I primarily viewed the south side of the building, but also the south ends of the west and east sides. At the locations where pieces of the facet separated from the building, I could see evidence of mortar failure, corrosion of metal anchors, and fracturing of terracotta blocks. At multiple locations throughout the rest of the facet, which was accessible to me, I observed small cracks that indicated failure of the terracotta glaze known as crazing, cracks through the terracotta, and spalling of the terracotta. Many locations of the facet have metal straps and plywood sheets intended to secure pieces of the terracotta which are deteriorating. It is our opinion that much of the remaining terracotta facet is at risk of separating from the building and falling to the ground, thereby posing an imminent hazard to the pedestrians and motorists near the south and east sides of the Collins Tower. According to Carpenter, the Collinses had a firm from Indiana secure an area on the building. Carpenter and Williams said they further asked the Collinses for immediate plans and action to secure the entire building. The city also last year used a drone to complete an aerial assessment of the tower. It was June of 2018 when the Collinses reportedly took over ownership of the building from Scotty Porter and Historic Restorations Incorporated and Land Company of Danville. Historic Restorations Incorporated is a nonprofit organization in Fayette, Alabama. In October of 2017, the company was given the building from Forge Group of Kentucky, which formerly was named First Corbin Financial Corporation. Brez was placed under ownership of the Forge subsidiary Land Company of Danville. The city filed a lawsuit against Land Company of Danville when city officials heard it transferred the building and would no longer be willing to work with the city to solve the imminent danger of falling debris from the building's exterior. In the lawsuit, the city asked for the building to be demolished within 30 days or restored within 60 days, or the building be turned over to the city. Then Danville Mayor Scott Eisenhower said about the Collinses in June of 2018, "Our message to the new owner first and foremost is steps needed to be taken to secure the exterior of the building to make sure the public is not at risk of falling debris. Once that step has been taken, we look forward to working with them." According to the previous city code violation report to the Land Company of Danville, this building has been deemed an unsafe structure. Minimum corrective action required to protect the health and welfare of the public. Submit for approval a debris collection system that will prevent facet debris from falling onto the public right of way on or before August 10th of 2017 to the Urban Services Director per the attached letter. Install the improved debris collection system within 7 days of city approval. Submit a facet removal or repair plan for approval to the Urban Services Director per the attached letter on or before September 15, 2017. Complete approved facet removal or repair plan within 6 months of city approval. Because the damaged areas are accessible to and threaten the health and safety of the public, and the cost of repairs likely exceeds the value of the building, demolition of the structure is recommended. Breeze Tower in 2012 was listed on Landmarks Illinois statewide 10 most endangered historic places in Illinois list. A market study performed on the tower years ago showed the building could support mixed residential, professional, and retail uses. The building has suffered from deterioration on its outside. Estimates have been at $1 million to $1.5 million just to renovate the outside terracotta. Vacant since 2006, the tower was then owned by Land Company of Danville, a subsidiary of Kentucky-based First Corbin Financial Corporation, which said it was unable to finance a renovation. It forced business tenants out and closed the building in 2005. Company was willing to gift the building to a nonprofit. The corporation tried to donate the building to the city, county, local colleges, and civic organizations which could receive rehabilitation grants. Debris initially fell from the building in February of 2006, a protective cover was installed for pedestrians. Okay, the next story is titled Something for Everyone, Danville High Fair Showcases Opportunities for Students. This is written by Carol Rome in Danville, and there's a picture of Northridge Middle School 8th graders from left, Nalia Brown, Adriana Bloomfield, and Carter Black admire the sculptures and pottery on the art table during Wednesday's elective fair at Danville High School. Waves of Northridge Middle School 8th graders Wednesday sized up a gymnasium full of opportunities awaiting them when they attend Danville High School next year. Two dozen elective classes and programs were on display during the Meet the Vikings Electives Fair. The purpose of the event was to hopefully pique the interest of next school year's incoming freshmen and encourage them to sign up for the courses. Some of the offerings included art, English composition and American literature, foreign languages, industrial technology, geometry and construction, music, anatomy, work experience and career exploration program known as the WECEP, junior reserves officers training corps, and a host of career and technical education courses. Eighth grade parents also were invited to visit the electives fair Wednesday night as part of a larger parents' night event and took place in Dick Van Dyke Auditorium. We have incoming freshmen here today, and tomorrow the 9th, 10th, and 11th graders will come down here for 20 minutes during their English class, said Daniel Heil, Applied Technology Department Chair and the WECEP Coordinator. The fair continues today for the DHS students who will have a few additional electives available to them, including advanced placement and a dual credit courses. We'll have information out for our dual credit classes such as economics and accounting and our credential classes, Heil said, referring to industry recognized credentials students can earn for taking the 5-hour training in the Start Safe, Stay Safe S4, as well as OSHA 10 and Microsoft certifications. Each time a new wave of 8th graders arrived in the DHS gym, they first huddled in a tight group and took in the overwhelming surroundings. The 8th graders eventually were drawn to the tables with the most visuals, such as JROTC table that displayed a uniform and a pair of military boots, the colorful foreign languages table with a gold glitter Eiffel Tower and a miniature piñata, and the art table with drawings, small sculptures, and bulb made from the homemade paper. 8th grader Connor Dittmar said he was impressed with the JROTC program. I did sign up for it because it takes care of my gym requirement and I'm interested in archery, he said. Eighth grader Colin Liggett said he was still pondering what electives to take his freshman year. I kind of like the engineering programs, he said. Inspecting the gadgets at the industrial technology table, 8th grader Jonathan Starr surprised himself when he lit up a tiny bulb that was part of a circuit. Oh, you can turn it on, he said. That looks cool. On the other side of the gym, 8th graders Savannah Hagen and Charisma Jordan were eager to sign up for foreign language class. My grandpa is Mexican, and I want to learn what he is saying when he speaks Spanish, Savannah said. Charisma said, I want to learn something new. 8th grader Carter Black said he enjoyed the electives fair. This gives you a description and shows you what you'll be doing in these classes, he said. Fellow 8th grader Adriana Bloomfield said she was excited by what she saw at the electives fair and looked forward to becoming a DHS freshman next school year. It's cool what they have here, she said. It's very visual, and the high school kids are here to tell you if they like the class and the teacher. There are lots of different things to do here, Adriana said. There's something here for everyone. Okay, we'll run through the obituaries. Doris G. Jenkins, 96, of Maitland and formerly of Cayuga, Indiana, passed away at noon EST time Friday, January 17, 2020, at Savannah Cove of Maitland in Maitland, Florida. Funeral services, 2 p.m. EST time Saturday, January 25th, at Diverter Funeral Home in Cayuga, officiating Reverend Brian Bartlett. Burial with honors, Thomas Cemetery in Newport, Indiana. Visitation, noon EST time Saturday, January 25th until time of the services at the funeral home. Contributions may be made to Cayuga Presbyterian Church, P.O. Box 386, Cayuga, Indiana, 47928-0386. Gary C. Lamar, 75, of Georgetown, passed away January 20th at the Danville VA. A celebration of Gary's life will be at 11 a.m. Friday, January 24th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville, with Pastor Jim Blue officiating. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. prior to the service. Burial will take place at Sunset Memorial Park. Memorials may be made in his name to the American Diabetes Association or Wreaths Across America. Thomas M. Cook, 87, of West Lafayette, Indiana, passed away at 2:49 p.m. Monday, January 21st at Indiana University Arnett Hospital in Lafayette. Friends may call from 9 a.m. until the time of funeral services at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 25th at the Indiana Veterans Home Auditorium in MacArthur Hall. Chaplain David Hess to officiate, interment with military rites to follow in the Indiana Veterans Home Cemetery. Memorials may be given to the animal shelter of the donor's choice. Shirley Dean from Indiana passed away on January 19th at the age of 80. Services will be at 2 p.m. EST time Friday, January 24th at Brown Bolt's Diedrich Funeral Service and Crematory, 515 East 53rd Street, Anderson, Indiana, with Pastor Kent Stuckey officiating. Burial will be at Anderson Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. EST time Thursday at the funeral home. Memorial contributions may be made to the Alzheimer's Association. Lola Kling, 84, of Champaign and formerly of Danville, passed away Thursday, January 16th. A celebration of life service will be at 2 p.m. Monday, January 27th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. prior to the service. Burial will take place at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Memorial contributions may be made in Lola's name to the Don Moyers Boys and Girls Club at 201 East Park Street, Champaign, Illinois, 61820. Philip Fuller, 74, of Danville, passed away Sunday, January 19th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation will be from 9 to 11:30 a.m. Friday, January 24th at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home at 10 East William Street in Danville. Service will follow at 11:30 a.m. Friday at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home with Paul Fuller officiating. Burial to follow at Danville National Cemetery with military honors by American Legion, Post 210. John Harvey Ritter, 72, of Danville, passed away Friday, January 17th in Liberty House at the VA Ileana Healthcare Center of Danville. Visitation will be from 2 to 3 p.m. EST time Saturday, January 25th, in Shelby Funeral Home of Covington, Indiana. The funeral will follow at 3 p.m. EST time at the funeral home, with Pastor Jay Sorrell officiating. Burial will be in Songer Cemetery with military graveside rites by American Legion, Post 210 of Danville. Jordan Valdez Parrish, 29, of Danville, died at 9:09 p.m. Sunday, January 19th at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leakin Sons Funeral Home in Danville. And Erna Vander Ploeg, 94, of Danville, died at 4:59 p.m. Tuesday, January 21st at North Logan Healthcare Center in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home in Danville. Okay, next story is titled Bismarck Lions Serve Pancake Sausage, written by a staff reporter in Bismarck. It's that time of year for pancake and sausage fundraisers, and the Bismarck Lions Club annual Pancake and Sausage Day will be February 1st. The club will serve pancakes and sausage from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Bismarck Henning Elementary School. Tickets are $8, with kids age 6 to 12 for $3, and 5 and under are free. Sponsor packs of 10 tickets are available for $75. Advance orders of sausage, loin roast, and spare ribs may be made by calling 217-446-3208. Funds donated will be used to help meet needs of the community, according to Lions release. On November 26th, the Bismarck Lions Club conducted a vision screening on the preschool students at Bismarck Henning Elementary School. KidSight, a Lions Club community service program, provides a simple and non-invasive vision screening test. At no cost to the students, the testing screens for several conditions, including lazy eye. Money raised on February 1st will allow Lions to meet pressing needs in our community, such as our preschool vision screening. Bismarck Lions members thank everyone who contributes to this important work. You are truly helping Lions make a difference, said Chuck Mockby IV, Bismarck Lions Club past president, in the release. The Bismarck Lions Club meets the first and third Monday of each month at 7 p.m. at Bismarck Henning Elementary School. Lions Clubs are a group of men and women who identify needs within the community and work together to fulfill those needs. For more information or to get involved with the Bismarck Lions Club, contact www.facebook.com/BismarckLions. Lions Clubs International is the world's largest service club organization, with more than 1.4 million members in about 48,000 clubs in more than 200 countries and geographical areas around the world. Since 1917, Lions Clubs have aided the blind and visually impaired, and made a strong commitment to community service and serving youth throughout the world. For more information about Lions Club International, visit the website at www.lionsclub.org. Not a lot of local news, so we'll do some other news. Marijuana consumption lounge to open. This is from the Chicago Tribune in Springfield. A dispensary in Springfield has what appears to be the first approval in Illinois to open a public space to consume marijuana. Illinois Supply and Provisions plans to connect the space to its marijuana shop in downtown Springfield. The company has not set a timeline for opening the space and said it is still working on a concept. It's going to be more than just a big open room where people can smoke cannabis, said spokesman Chris McLeod. It's going to be well done, it's going to be tastefully done, and it's going to be an experience. Springfield City Council approved the company's request to open the space Monday night. Recreational marijuana sent on sale in Illinois 3 weeks ago, but state law banned smoking in streets, parks, or other public areas. Condominium associations and landlords can also prohibit marijuana use. Municipalities can regulate public consumption areas. Springfield Alderwoman Erin Conley said the space will help clear up issues for renters whose landlords have banned marijuana use, or travelers who don't have private residence to consume it. We do have a lot of tourists. We've already seen a fair amount of out-of-town visitors coming to our dispensary, and we have a lot of hotels downtown where people cannot consume, she said. Next story is Teacher of the Week, and I knew that I wanted to help people. Emily Bridge quickly learned during college that she enjoyed assisting students learn. The special education teacher at Georgetown Ridge Farm High School has a special way of connecting with students to help them make things click. I find my work important because the kids are important. I tell myself every day that I am looking at the future of America. All of my students have goals in life, and I look forward to seeing what they do after high school. I became a teacher because I knew that I wanted to help people. In college, I took an intro to teaching class first semester of my freshman year, and I was quickly hooked. I was placed in a high school biology class, and my favorite part was helping the students who were struggling. It's such a great feeling to see it finally click with students who feel lost with a concept or who are simply unsure of themselves and just need a little boost. My favorite, most unique lesson that I teach is I teach three instructional English classes, and one of my favorite things to do with a written work is to really dive deep into the characters and events, especially in novels. This normally turns into a discussion. Much to my students' horror, I am pretty sappy, and what may start off as a simple discussion can quickly turn into a serious heart-to-heart. During a particular unit, I had students move over to a table in the back of the room for a family meeting while we read the story and discussed together. Although they were a couple of eye rolls, within the following week, several students were angry if we were not reading together at the table. If I recall correctly, there was more than one argument about who deserved to sit on the head. Something else I'm passionate about is art. I put it in quotes because my idea of art is simply doodling. Each day, students are greeted with a doodle and a quote on the whiteboard at the front of the class. My most fulfilling moment in the job was any time a student shows appreciation because of small things that you do. If I weren't a teacher, I would be 13-year-old me would say I would work for National Geographic and be a wildlife photographer. I had big dreams of roaming in Africa, in the African savanna in the Green Ranger with my very expensive camera. However, I am no way interested in that life anymore. I love to bake. As many of you know, as many of us know, baked goods are the perfect way to reward bribe students. Although it would be stressful financially, owning a bakery would be pretty neat. To be totally honest, I cannot imagine doing anything else besides teaching. Principal Kevin Thomas says she's dedicated to her position. We ask her to do many things for us as a co-teacher in the regular education classroom and also as a class sponsor. She continues to come to work with a smile on her face, always keeping in mind that what is best for her students. Okay, we'll run through the community briefs. In Danville, painting session set, January's Color Splash at the Danville Art League at 320 North Franklin Street will be a winter landscape acrylic painting. The session will be from 6 to 8:30 p.m. on Friday. The instructor will be Carol Garver. Cost is $35. All materials are provided along with refreshments. Payments may be made on the league's website or in person with cash or check. For information about the event, please call the Art League at 217-442-9264 or check our website at www.danvilleartleague.com. Writers Group meets. The Danville Public Library's Writers Group brings together writers of all levels to learn about writing and publishing and to share their work. It meets at 10 a.m. to noon on Saturday in the second floor conference room for adults ages 18 and over. Fundraiser set, Culver's at 3210 North Vermilion Street will donate a portion of its sales from 5 to 8 p.m. on Monday to raise funds for Danville's Trinity Lutheran School. And in Westville, movies scheduled the Wednesday afternoon at the movies presented by the Westville Public Library will be at 2 p.m. on February 5th. The film stars Amy Adams and Anna Brady, who plans to travel to Dublin, Ireland, to propose marriage to her boyfriend, Jeremy, on Leap Day. Because call the library at 267-3170 to reserve a seat. Just a few calendar things. In Danville, the Lions Club meets at noon at Spanky's Banquet Hall at 409 East Main Street. And the Danville branch NAACP 3009 at 7 p.m. at Greater Shiloh Baptist Church at 609 North Bowman Avenue. And Alcoholics Anonymous is at 6:30 p.m. at Aces Building at 119 North Vermilion Street in Danville. And in Tilton, the NAR Anon is at 7:30 at the Tilton Senior Center at 607 West 14th Street. And at Westville Area Fire Protection District, 7 p.m. Fire District Administration Center, 302 North State Street in Westville. So that'll be it for today, Thursday, January 23rd, 2020. Hopefully y'all stay warm out there. I just got back from Florida and I'm not liking this weather. I don't know about you, but anyway, I hope y'all have a good week and hope to see you again next week. Take care.